statistical approach to what I've been looking, just some tests you're going to do to see if you've got problems, but I haven't come up with an actual the kind of aggregation he's talking about, which sounds pretty good. So this is my contact information, and I would ask that at this time, if you, again, you have, I have some new people in here. If you want more time series sessions or more stuff on climate generators, like workshops, symposiums, or just plain sessions, please get in touch with me afterwards, because I'm the new incoming chair to the A11, and we need to see who's interested in forming communities. So with that, I guess I would just like to thank Dr. Hatfield for supporting me in doing this work. Generally, researchers want to determine periods and behavior of interest, and the spectra often used to look for this with a discrete Fourier transform. But generally, the sound results of the spectra are best when based on a stationary series. So in this case, what we mean by stationary is the lack of large-scale trends, which I'll show you one from another of John's data set. But in general, a lot of these seem to have it. And I'm going to show you just a quick and dirty test. You can tell the whether you think you have to deal with it. And things you can do about it if you don't have these tools John does. But another problem, though, is that a lot of these researchers, like John, I've seen some of the files he's collected from barracks. Some of these field campaigns, they collect thousands of data sets during the season. And so automated testing and processing is highly desirable. You can't really study every last data set thoroughly. So my objective here is to just show you some graphical indicators of and some statistical tests for trends. I'm going to show you evaluation of a large number of sets, and then I'll just point out some analysis options that are more classical but are not inconsistent with what John's doing, like one of them's aggregation. I'm going to show you an example data set with trend, but you've already seen one, so this is redundant. But this is a half-hourly horizontal wind speed in a series that was recorded at 10 hertz, and I'm just going to denote it U of T. This was from a 2004 campaign conducted near Ames, Iowa. And for 10 hertz at a half hour, you're talking about 18,000 points in the series. So here's a plot of them. And you can note sort of a general decline over the period from starting high and then going to lower at the end. So you have to ask what your cycles of interest to really do an appropriate analysis. Note there are large scale and smaller scale cycles that you can sort of see, as John did. So this is probably a nice one, though, because this is over a corner soybean field, if it's in Iowa, which is a lot more uniform than the irrigated agriculture in West Texas. Oh. So right now I'm just going to show you some classical graphical indicators of trend. One thing you can do is an autocorrelation plot for the series. And this just shows the raw series with the lag autocorrelation for the first 4,500 lags, which is about a quarter of the length of the series, which is a sort of rule of thumb for doing it. Notice there's almost like an exponential decay pattern. This is a common graphical indication of trend. Another thing is we can look at various plots you can do with spectra. And this is the, you can use the outputs of the Fourier series to define a function called spectral density. And you can plot it against each frequency in the series. In this case, the black dots are the spectra. The black line is just a simple Hanning smoothing of the spectra, and the gray lines show an associated 95% confidence interval. But if you notice again, it starts up here and goes down here. The decreasing pattern with increasing frequency is also a suggestion of trend. Another thing you can do, aside from the spectral density, you can plot it against wave number, and you can also, from the outputs of the Fourier transform, construct what's called a periodgram fraction. In this case, the periodgrams, the gray, the open gray circles, and the spectral red against the red axis, and the spectral densities, the dark black circles, plotted against the left axis, both against wave numbers. Now, you don't see very much in here. If you notice, everything large is near zero on the scale, because we're showing the full 9,000 wave numbers for the transform. But 85% of the variability is in the first 40. That is another trend indicator. Now, what I did is aggregate these data to 0.1 second intervals and redo it just so I could expand this graph and you can look at it better. Here you can definitely see that whether you use spectral density or periodgram fraction, that about the first five are among the largest numbers. That is generally you can take as an indicator of trend. And then you can also take those periodgram fraction values and accumulate them, and you can plot those against wave numbers. In this case, the solid black line you see start from here and shoot up and asymptote is the cumulative curve of interest. The dotted gray lines up here and down here are natural boundaries for the cumulative periodgram 0 and 1. And the gray bands are actually confidence intervals that you'd like, if you, your spectra should plot in if you had no frequencies of interest. But we can see this one shoots out from wave number 1 and stays out for the whole period, never comes back. That is also an indicator of trend. So this is a montage of all three of those, and just to let every single one showed an indication, something you might consider as trend. So, but what I'm going to do now, since they want to really automate these kind of things, is just do a simple test that you could do in a computer program. And so a very common analytic test I'm going to show in a minute, but first of all, you've already seen this. I'm going to use some data sets from that BEREC study. I remind you what that meant was bushland evapotranspiration and agricultural remote sensing experiments. I have 394 half-hourly horizontal wind speed sets and 394 half-hourly carbon dioxide flux sets recorded at 20 hertz. So that's 8 full days at 36,000 observations a half hour, and I also aggregated them to hourly sets, so I have 192 corresponding hourly series at 72,000 observations. A very simple common test a lot of people do in the time series literature to look for trend is called nonparametric correlation. And the two ones I've seen most are Spearman's and Kendall's. Recall Pearson's is only valid for linear relationships. The reason to use these is they are valid for non-linear relationships. I'm only going to show you and focus on Kendall's in this from the remainder of this because I've seen some justification for it in the time series literature, and I've also seen it used more in the time series literature. So for those of you who don't know about these, I'm just going to conceptually say to you that if you had every point in your time series, every point to the right of the one that precedes it was bigger, then conceptually your, whether it's linear or curving over or what, then your Kendall's tau would be plus one. And conversely, if every point was less than the one to the left of it, it would be minus one. So it's still, you can use it conceptually like Pearson's correlation to decide on relationships. Now, since these are time series and you saw an autocorrelation plot, these data are highly allocorrelated. So there are procedures you can use to get effective degrees of freedom and all that, but I'm really not going to go into that for, I think they need really what's some practical rules. And so you could say for any tau value that's greater in absolute value than 0.01, which is it's probably actually for any kind of significance for these things, a lot less, but you could barely see that on a graph. Should it be the indication of some kind of large-scale trend over the period of the time series? And for the record, the tau value for the Iowa series that I showed you a minute ago was a negative 0.33, which is pretty suggestive of large-scale trend. So what I'm going to do now is just show you some of these plots against hour of the day. Even if, you know, less than half the data were effectively independent, most of these tau values would be very significant. They range from about minus 0.85, which I guess would be about that one, to plus about 0.56, which I guess would be that one, with much of the smaller scatter occurring if you look around from 10 to, well, just a couple hours on each side of noon, you see a lot less scatter and smaller values. And that may be suggestive of the different conditions. But just for counting, about 4% of the tau values are less than 0.01. And if you pick some other number like 0.05 in absolute value, you'd have still only 22% of the values fall in there. Now, if I aggregate these data onto an hourly time, or just, I mean, make hourly time files on the same time interval and redo them, I'm still going to get indications of trend. Here we have, they range from about minus 0.73 to about plus 5.8 here. And again, you see tighter scatter during the hours just past noon. And in this plot, we have about 6% of the tau values are less than or equal to 0.01 in absolute value, and about 25% of the tau values are less than or equal to 0.05. Now, these both were for horizontal wind speed. Now, I'm going to look at one of the main interests in these kind of things to determine water and carbon dioxide flux. Now, if we look at the carbon dioxide half-hourly flux, we see bigger values and suggestions of a pattern even. So notice that the diurnal, and so notice the pattern, and that most of the tau values are probably going to be significant, and they're comparatively larger than those for the wind speed. Here we range from about 0.94 way down here to, I'm not sure which of these up here would be about 0.81. And if we aggregate them to double the period, or combine them to make double the period, and repeat the test, we still have a huge effect from about 0.95 to a minus 0.95 to about plus 0.87. So, and on this set, we only have 1% of the values less than and equal to 0.01, and we have about 8% less than or equal to 0.05 in absolute value. So, is large-scale trend, or even if it's driven by these large-scale eddies, unusual? It looks like not. Okay. So, without knowing what these meteorologists did, I just put together what commonly was done in more conventional means. These are just illustrations and suggestions of where to go. A lot of people, when they're not interested in the large-scale trend, the first thing they'll do is do a high-pass filter to try to remove the high-frequency terms before doing the spectra. Some people might actually model the trend and remove it, but you got to do a very good job at that. They could use an analysis that doesn't require the series to be stationary, and a lot of work in time series these days is going to what's known as wavelets, which are supposed to not require stationary, at least some types of them. I don't know enough about it at this point, but I'm going to be looking into that. And then, as John said, they were looking for aggregation intervals, so possibly aggregating. There's two ways to aggregate. You could aggregate the data set so you have a longer period, hoping if there's like diurnal cycles, you do a multi-day period and they would fall out. But the another way is to, if you're not interested in the very small cycles, there's also low-pass filters, but there's also ways to look for aggregation integrals, I guess, that won't affect the frequencies that you are trying to find. And actually, there are things called bandpass filters to try to tease those out the best. So let's just give a couple more examples, and then it's just going to be conceptual. I'm going to look at the Iowa series now and not anymore the Barex. But the simplest high-pass filter that is commonly used is called the first difference operator, and you just take away the last point from the one right next to it, and it's like doing a derivative on a continuous variable. This filter is very strong, though, and may not always be appropriate. As I said in the last slide, I guess I spoke too soon, but filters ideally should be designed to reveal specific frequencies, and that for this kind of job is going to be tough because you can see the variability in the different data sets, and it might be you have to build classes of filters for things. Anyway, let's look at it. This is a plot of the first different series for that. Notice that is reasonably constant and centered on zero over the half-hourly period. Also notice there's this huge outlier up here. And just to get at just a first cut estimate of how effectively how many independent points there are, I just using the first order correlation, there's an approximation formula for the effect of degrees of freedom, and it's about 11,000 here, or 60% of the series. So, however, if you look at the spectra of those, whoops, you can see this is a montage, like I shared before, of the three spectral graphs. And the patterns are reversed from what you saw in the first montage. High frequency terms seem to be increasingly important in this, but they may not readily reveal the exact cycles of interest, unless, of course, something like these, whoops, two extreme ones here. This mouse has a roll thing, which is very sensitive. But if you look right around there, there's a couple. Boy. So, another thing you can do, but is not really going to be an option for people with this much data, would be to try to model the trend. Other than if you did this in some selective sets and could see some patterns, you might pick a suitable basis function for the very large scale. But it looks to me that's the kind of thing maybe this ogive's trying to do, but more directed towards the science. But a general model for this type of thing would be just a trend plus your cycles of interest plus some kind of autoregressive error series if you didn't, if that was a problem. So I'm just going to show you a quick little thing I did trying to modeling just the trend part of this. And I guess I should say you could, in some sense, model the trend with the low-frequency Fourier terms, but it's generally a bad idea. I don't know if any of you have ever seen somebody try to like model a square wave or a triangle shape with Fourier series. It takes an odd series, and you sort of like the first one becomes a bump, and then you have one with three bumps, and they superimpose, and what you're trying to do through superposition is have everything cancel out, and it's inelegant, if anything else. But for this set, I'm going to use the data averaged over 10-second intervals. Two 10-second intervals, or 100 observations yielding 180 points. And I'm not going to show you everything I did, but what I settled on is what's known as a fractional order Bessel function, J2. You can notice it's the product of inverse polynomials and trig functions, which some people might say, yuck. But I tried many alternatives, and this works so much better than anything else. It might suggest a suitable basis function to try on more of these. Conceptually, though, this form can be considered a model of a damped oscillation, and I'm wondering if that may not be something that's going on here as well. I'm just going to show you the curve fit right now, and here the black dots are 10-second average values, so that's these dots. The line is the actual curve fit, and up here is the formula for the curve fit, and the gray band is the 95% confidence interval, of course, assuming no autocorrelation, so effectively it should be wider probably, but for first cut, it showing you what's going on. Here the I work with a lot of agronomists, and a lot of statisticians hate this, but this is what agronomists like, the coefficient of determination. So I give them several things, but I always include this. So the coefficient of determination for this fit is 0.55 and 180 points. But if you, I also redid it on the original 18,000 point series, and that goes down to 0.049. But recall there was a large outlier. So I refit it with a robust regression, and it came out to be 0.67 when using the fair weight for the robust weight. So I guess, can we say that there's a large-scale oscillatory trend that dominates the variability here? Just food for thought. But if you look then and take the residuals and look at the spectra, it looks very similar to what you saw before for the raw series. But I can assure you, if you look at the scale on the spectral density, it is an order of magnitude smaller. So, but, so what it looks like, though, is there's still some more trend we could model out of there. So there's still more work to be done. I'm just going to pose some plausible alternative analysis, but I really haven't done any more work in there, and it looks like I need to work closer with John since he's got something here. But remember, modeling the individual sets is out, but I'm wondering if we could get some test conditions looking at a few sets to do some smarter things where they could automate, try to automate this. But optimal filters and other procedures for automated analysis for every set may be difficult to achieve, but it's a desirable goal. My first would be more filtering, but with a better filter, but with the warning that maybe a single one will not do the job. Maybe several are needed. Different conditions may dictate what those are. And of course, I haven't pursued this any farther. Then there's other transformation. I know what I was trying to do was look at some kind of like fundamental term from some kind of wavelet basis and look and see if I'm taking most of this out. And I haven't tried a lot yet, but there are other periodic functions too, which I also have not tried. And I guess it might be interesting to pursue that. And then, of course, there's aggregating sets, and we've already talked about this. But of interest, things like CO2 and water vapor on the evapotranspiration on very clear, nice days form nice patterns of some kind of periodic function. So it may be, depending on what you're looking for, you could aggregate things with daily scales, and over a couple of days, they might look stationary. Yeah, that's an old adage in time series, one man's noise is another man's signal. And there's actually a very, there was a Nobel Prize won in finding noise. And that's the famous 3-degree background signal from the Penzias Wilson research. So again, but with 8 days, I'd have to get a lot more sets in to look at anything like that. And then, of course, there's the kind of aggregation windows John was talking about, where you could aggregate out maybe your lowest frequencies to find intermediate. But he's got a selection tool geared to the phenomenon based on other variables, which is good. So my conclusions are, though, that trend and eddy series is pretty easy to assess with just a nonparametric correlation, and it's generally present in these hourly and half-hourly series. But finding where to go from here is still something I need to work on. So with that, I'll take your questions.
You know?
Well, that's just because of the program I'm using. That's what it prints out. I didn't.
Right.
I made a macro in sure. SAS, and it's just the output from Park Spectra.
Yeah.
So to put the graphs together.
Is that on the log scale, or is that on the?
Oh, it automatically chose the log scale.
Right. Because you're asking if these are stationary, and if it was not stationary, then at the zero frequency, it would shoot up to infinity. So by not going out to zero, you're able to see what's going on in the graph much better.
Well, I don't believe in what it prints out. You start with wave number one. You don't have zero.
Right.
And then maybe that, you know, that's not the best program to use, but...
No, no, it's a curious question.
Yeah.
You've done a lot of nice stuff here.
Any more questions? Well, we don't have our next speaker, and so we have till...